Coming up on Tech News Today, Windows 8 gets a price on its box, not its head. Kindle Paperwhite is profitless, and Apple steals from Samsung this time. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, October 12, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute, email filtering in the cloud for companies and resellers of any size. MailRoute offers live human support and one-click sign-up. For free Postini migration and 10% off the life of your account, visit MailRoute.net, click the sign-up button, and enter the promo code TNT. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we want to wish Sarah Lane a happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Thanks, guys.
She's Skyping in from her birthday home.
That's for your birthday, I got your Giants a win.
Oh, thanks. That's so nice,
no problem.
Jason.
You
that
bet.
Is one of the nicest gifts I've ever gotten. Not that anyone needs to see them, but I am wearing my indoor pants.
Thank goodness you're wearing pants.
That's good.
Let's
to know.
Start yes. off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news. Indoor pants! I, however, am not. The imaginary iPad Mini has had a turbulent imaginary life. It suffered from redesigns and production delays and the failure to deliver an invite to the press this week. There's a lot to go through for a product that Apple has never said one single thing about. But I have good news for my imaginary friend here. All Things D reports an announcement will come from Apple on their campus on October 23rd. Apple still isn't saying anything.
Online retailer Newegg has revealed four Windows 8 packages that'll go on sale on the 26th. The Windows 8 Professional Upgrade for $69. The Windows 8 Pro Pack, also $69, product key only. The Windows 8 OEM package for $99. And the Windows 8 Professional for $139. Both OEM and Pro versions will come in 32 and 64-bit versions, same price. It's possible a few of these numbers might be temporary launch offers, though, so keep that in mind. And remember, you can officially reserve your copy of Pro now for $69.99 at all the big retailers, or you'll be able to upgrade to Pro online for $39 through January 31st. It's a lot of numbers.
Dell and Vizio introduced a whole bunch of PCs. Let's spotlight a few right now. There's the Dell XPS 12 convertible, which features a screen that flips within its bezel, kind of like that old Dell Inspiron Duo did. Dell also added touch to its all-in-one PC, the XPS 127. Vizio also introduced two all-in-one PCs with touch and added touchscreens to some of its Ultrabooks.
Microsoft Office 2013 has gone RTM, which means that the final build will be available to MSDN and TechNet subscribers in mid-November. Now, volume licensing customers will get it at the same time that the general consumer will get it, which is sometime after the Mayan calendar destruction, or as Microsoft likes to call it, Q1. No official word on iOS or Android versions of the calendar.
The wide open world of...
and Word... and PowerPoint.
The wide open world of 3D printing is really, really coming into its own. First, MakerBot announced printers at CES this year that didn't need assembly. Then several 3D printer companies announced the opening of stores this year. And now 3D printing has taken another big step towards maturity. Nathan Mervold has received a patent for a system to prevent people printing unauthorized objects. Yes, folks, DRM, now available for 3D printing. Who wants it? Raise your plastic resin hand.
A U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit overturned a pretrial sales ban against Samsung's Galaxy Nexus phone, which might not be a huge setback for Apple, considering that the Nexus is a little long in the tooth in Samsung's lineup. But this ruling could set a precedent, making it more difficult for any company to use patents to get another company's product pulled off the market. Neither Apple nor Samsung have commented on the outcome.
Making money on hardware is for the birds. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos told the BBC that Amazon does not make any money on its hardware, saying its devices are break-even, so they're not taking a loss there. Amazon launches its Kindle Paperwhite and Kindle HD in Europe on October 25th.
Microsoft Secure Boot requires boot software to be signed with a cryptographic signature, which is bad news for non-Windows operating systems. Now, Secure Boot can be disabled, and some distros plan to offer signed certificates, but there's no third way. Well, the Linux Foundation will make available a minimal bootloader that is signed and won't boot any OS directly. Rather, it'll handle off it'll hand off any of the other bootloaders signed to an it'll hand off any other bootloader signed or unsigned. So this circumvents the secure in Secure Boot. And the bootloader will require user input so that nothing can be done silently.
Yeah. Last month, along with the rollout of iOS 6, Apple introduced its new clock app, which looked a lot like the Swiss National Railway, or SBB's, clock design made by watchmaker Mondaine. An SBB spokesperson said at the time that they'd be seeking an amicable agreement and compensation from Apple. And today, it looks like that happened. Both have announced a signed licensing agreement, although nobody's saying how much this design is costing Apple, but obviously they want it badly.
The South Carolina Supreme Court says that you can access someone's offline email without permission, without violating the Stored Communications Act. The Stored Communications Act allows for such an action as long as those messages are in electronic storage. And the court differed in its reasoning, but said that the email stored in the cloud does not count as electronic storage, but that's inconsistent with another case decided by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So how do you stop people from accessing your email and making it the basis of a lawsuit? Delete all the things everywhere.
R-E-M. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by MailRoute. Now, my friend here loves spam, all right? But I'm going to give you maximum no spam. If you choose MailRoute as the sponsor you respond to for this episode of Tech News Today, you will receive not only absolutely no spam, but an easy one-click sign-up process. You can migrate from Postini to MailRoute today and receive inbound email protection services free of charge for the remainder of your Postini contract. That's something my opponent cannot promise. Customer support is key to this campaign. So when you call or email MailRoute, a service ticket is automatically generated and you will receive a call back within the hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. MailRoute has hosted email filtering service in the cloud for businesses of any size. Hey, they love the little guy too, all right? They're fighting for you. They'll even handle single user accounts. There's no easier way to filter your email. So go check it out right now. Risk-free. You don't have to sell your vote or anything. Try it free. Visit MailRoute.net, click the sign-up button, and enter the promo code TNT to start your 15-day free trial and get 10% off the life of your account. No credit card required for the free trial. That's MailRoute.net. Click the sign-up button and enter the promo code TNT. And we thank MailRoute for their support of Tech News Today. Let's kick it off with the Windows 8 pricing revelation that came not only from Newegg, it was leaked from Newegg, and then Steve Sinofsky actually posted it for real up on the Windows 8 site. They announced that Windows 8 Professional Upgrade, which will take your current Windows installation and upgrade it to Windows 8 Professional, will be $69. That will eventually rise to $199, so you want to get that as soon as possible. They're trying to motivate you to upgrade soon. Windows 8 Pro Pack, which is taking your Windows 8 installation and upgrading it to Pro, will sell for $69. It's just a product key card. And then there's Windows 8 OEM. That's the System Builder Edition, right? That's the one that you're going to buy off the shelf. That's going to be $99. That's your actual just regular old-fashioned Windows 8 one, 32 and 64-bit. Windows 8 Professional, which is sort of equivalent to Windows 7 Pro, Windows 7 Ultimate, will sell for $139, 32 and 64-bit. There will also still be a downloadable Windows 8 Pro upgrade that will be available for $39.99 until January 31st, at which point it'll go up in price. I did not see, now this, did you see, did either any of you guys see a Windows 8 upgrade edition? So if I'm just going from Windows 7 Home to Windows 8, not Windows 8 Pro, I didn't see an option for that. It basically only listed the Windows 8 Pro upgrade.
I didn't see that, but I saw all the different versions, all the different numbers, and I was thinking about the cheapest option was being $40. So yeah, I didn't find it offhand.
It seems like they're just trying to kind of nudge everyone into going to Windows 8 Pro with that $39.99 download or $69 boxed edition. Now, if you do buy the boxes, they come in 5 different front covers. Collect them all.
Ooh, collectible? Yes.
Are you going to buy 5
of them? I mean, that's so weird.
Yeah. And I frankly, they're pretty ugly. I mean,
I think they're ugly. I just don't want. I don't need more than one of them.
It doesn't matter. It's like if the operating system works fine.
It's not like if that's your default wallpaper because you picked that box. I can see you're like, oh, this is hideous. It doesn't impact the operating system. People think that's hideous for other reasons, Tom.
Sure. New Windows 7 PC users, don't fret if you've purchased your new PC between June 2nd or until January 31st, 2013. You'll be entitled to a $15 Windows 8 upgrade. So if you're really like, I got to buy this machine right now, but it only has Windows 7 and I want to have Windows 8, it's a $15 tax for you to pull the trigger right now. Not that much, actually. Also, they announced pre-orders. You can now pre-order Windows 8 at Amazon.com, Best Buy, Staples, Office Depot, Newegg, the Microsoft Store, a bunch of other places. You can also start pre-ordering Windows 8 PCs from their partners, Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Samsung, and Sony. Lots of these have touchscreens. There's a lot of articles out there about all the different models that are coming with touchscreens. And Forbes reports that Microsoft will spend between $1.5 and $1.8 billion marketing this. There's no evidence of any of that money being spent yet, so expect a blitz coming soon. All the Microsoft ads I've seen are for Bing or IE up until now.
What do you think it's going to be the big song that they license for this?
Gangnam Style.
For $1 billion, they can do better than that. Come on.
Metro. if they still called it Metro, it could be Metro Style.
Maybe Riding on the Metro by Berlin.
Yeah, but see, they can't do that now. Are you excited? Yeah, no. I am excited about a new Windows launch. I have some trepidation about whether I'm going to like living in this new interface, but I'm definitely going to plunk down that $40 and upgrade as soon as October 26th rolls around. Anybody else looking forward to
it? I'm excited. I want to see it on the tablet, really. I mean, all the usage I've gotten out of Windows 8 has been on a laptop, and then that immediately has a bunch of my preconceived ideas of how that's supposed to work versus Windows on a tablet, which I have other ideas how that should work, because Windows on a tablet used to be abysmal. Tiny targets, very hard to get into the start bar or get into that tray. But with the new version of it, I want to really see how that works on the tablet interface, and then when I kind of want to use it as a laptop, how that operates as well, because I usually use a tablet and rarely use a laptop.
Darren, what about you? Do you live in Windows much?
No, you know, I really don't. I keep a Windows VM only for Photoshop. So if Adobe would just make a binary for Linux, I would just go ahead and pay them whatever they ask. Personally, I just ordered, you know, Ubuntu's DVD for Precise Pangolin. $8. So I saved $92 is the way I'm looking at it.
Or you could have just downloaded it.
But I got the CD.
Oh, but you got the thing. It's a collectible.
And get this. Instead of 5 collectible colors, you get a DVD pack of 5 DVDs.
Aha. Look at that. Sarah, what's your take on the Windows launch?
Yeah, you know, I'm probably not first in line to get a Windows machine. I do not have a Windows machine right now. Then again, anybody who's familiar with TNT pre-show knows that my laptop is on the fritz. So, hey, I don't know. If Windows 8 seems to go over pretty well, you know, I'll give it a couple weeks. Maybe that'll be my next laptop. I mean, I certainly have enough other Macs to not feel like I, you know, have totally gone to the other
abandoned
side.
One side. IdeaPad exactly. Yoga, maybe?
Maybe so. Yeah, I don't want something called the Yoga. Sorry. It's just not for me.
You can rename it. You don't have to actually keep that logo up there.
Yeah. Scrape off the word Yoga.
Why not? What difference does it make?
I'll be honest. I'm actually really looking forward to the slightly creepy and mostly awkward Windows 8 commercials. If they do it anything like 7 and Vista.
Oh, $1.8 billion. We're going to see some crazy stuff, I have a feeling. We're going to see some stunts.
I'm wondering what celebrity they're going to have Bill Gates pal around with this time. That's going to be fun.
Well, it won't
Born
be Bill.
In the USA. That should be the song.
That won't go over well in the overseas market.
Yeah,
I know. When you start me up. No.
They already did that. Yeah. They burned that one. And Madonna.
Supposedly, they originally wanted REM's It's the End of the World as We Know It, but they couldn't
That's
get the licensing.
That's not a good idea.
I think they'll reunite the Beatles and say, take that, Apple.
How about It's a Beautiful Day, U2? Boom.
I think they did that too.
Oh.
All right.
That's why it came to mind.
Thank you, Tucson.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait until the Blitz begins. But until
here
then,
comes the Blitz.
Let's talk about Amazon's Kindle Fire HD and Paperwhite sales not making any money for Amazon.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos is a part of his as part of the push to talk about the Kindle Fire and Paperwhite in Europe. Talked to the BBC and explained that Amazon's selling hardware like the Kindle at cost. So, I mean, originally some of the numbers, the teardowns, people thought that Amazon was losing money on some of these devices. Turns out they're making zero on it. Again, that's actually good if you think about it in the whole financial world. He says that what we find is when people buy a Kindle, they read four times as much as they did before they bought the Kindle, but they don't stop buying paper books. Kindle owners read four times as much, but they continue to buy both types. So the thing, what I'm kind of curious about, you know, we see two different distinct models when it comes to tablets, right? We got the hardware model where we make all the money on the hardware. Apple does it, Samsung does it. This is where you can have a global presence right away. Then there's the Amazon method of, we'll sell it at cost, and we're hoping that you'll keep buying all our content, and over time we'll make back a lot of money on this.
Also the game console model.
Right.
Frankly, yeah.
That's worth for game consoles. Is there one right way to do a tablet at this point, or is Amazon showing that you can actually pull this off?
I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I honestly think both of these models work. It all depends on how you do it. It will be interesting to see the collision of these two juggernauts over time. Right now, Apple is not suffering by Amazon's success at all. And Amazon doesn't seem to be being held back by the sales of the iPad. So I think what this just shows is you need to do what you're good at. Amazon's like, we're good at selling you stuff. We're, you know, getting you to order things and sending them to you. And so that's books, that's shipping. And if you think of Amazon more often, you're likely to go to Amazon when you need to buy shampoo rather than anywhere else. And so if we can get a Kindle in your hands, you're more likely to be thinking about Amazon a lot. Whereas Apple's like, we don't care about that. We want to sell you devices, and we want you to feel like you live inside of those devices. So we want the Kindle app to be on the iPad, and then everybody wins. Because Amazon's selling hardware to get it into more hands. They don't care if you buy a Kindle or an iPad or a Nexus 7. They want you to put that Amazon app, both the store and the Kindle and anything else they throw down there, and buy their stuff. So frankly, they both can win.
Sarah, do you think that the pricing on the devices makes the Amazon stuff not look as premium? Because they are selling it at cost. Jeff Bezos spent a lot of time when they introduced the Fire HD saying, it's a premium device. We spend a lot of money on it. We're giving to you at cost because we want you to buy our services. Do you think that price undercuts its premium image?
Well, I mean, I guess you could argue that if something is priced low enough, then there's no way it can be of high enough quality. But I think that's why Jeff Bezos is saying, listen, we're taking a hit on this because we want you to have this device. We're the ones who are going to eat some of that cost because once you get this, you as a customer win. And yes, we've got this whole Amazon ecosystem that once you have a Kindle, you're more valuable to us. So yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at it as, boy, they should have just priced them higher so that perception would have been that everything's, you know, made of gold and diamonds. But I don't know. I don't think anybody, if you want a Kindle Fire HD, then you're going to get it and you're going to be happy that it's not more expensive.
You get the warm fuzzies because Amazon's passing the savings to you, Tom. You feel like, they care about me.
But they're not. They price their ebooks way up. Their ebooks are way... They're not passing the savings along.
They're
basically enabling me, which is why I'm actually not buying Kindles anymore. I actually use the Kindle all the time, but I use it on the Nexus 7. I don't use it on a Kindle.
That's too bright.
Because the Nexus 7 actually allows me to do other things instead of just read the book, which I know the Kindle Fire does as well. But I didn't really like the Kindle Fire. It was slow and laggy, and I wasn't interested in buying the new one when it came out because I already had an Nexus 7. Darren, do you do any of the Amazon stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Amazon, I go there all the time whenever I need anything. So you're right. They've definitely capitalized on, you know, that consumer behavior of I need a thing and boom, it shows up. So if I were a massive ebook reader and not like kind of a more audiobook listener. So did I say ebook listener? You know what I meant. And then yeah, I would probably just pick an ecosystem. And I like Kindle's model of we don't care what your device is, and that's so great. I love it to be agnostic. So whether I've got an iOS device or an Android or even one of their home brand devices, to be able to have things sync within that ecosystem so I'm always on the same page, all of that stuff. I think it's so early in the ebook race, and I feel like it's kind of interesting to kind of compare this to, say, game consoles, which are kind of, you know, long in the tooth now, but to look at the wars between the, you know, the PS3, the Xbox, the Wii, how, like, you know, some of the, those manufacturers actually lose money, whereas, like, you know, Nintendo, they make it on the titles and on the hardware. And I think that Amazon's doing the right thing, because if they can keep selling this, if they can keep, you know, affording to sell it at that cost, then, you know, they'll definitely stay in the race, and it's going to benefit them more in the long term than anybody else. And, you know, they could squeak out anyone that that might not have that kind of capital.
Now, Amazon and Apple can actually share a marketplace because of the different models. We talked about that. Apple and Samsung cannot share a marketplace, which is why Apple is stealing people from Samsung, apparently. What's going on with this, Sarah? They've stolen one of the luminaries of chip design.
I mean, I don't know if they, you know, came to his house in the night, you know, chained him and drug him out. He may have gone willingly, but, you know, Apple, we talked earlier about Apple and Samsung's patent wars. They continue. But there is more news.
You're working it wrong. By that, we mean you're working for the wrong company. Come with us.
You're working for us starting right now. It just works. Apple hired Jim Murgard, who is actually a 16-year veteran of AMD. He was the vice president and chief engineer there before going over to Samsung. And he's actually known for playing lead role in the development of the Brazos AMD chips. Those were low-end portable computer chips. And obviously, both Samsung and Apple rely on these kinds of ARM chips. But Patrick Moorhead, who's also a former AMD executive, said Murgard actually has a lot of expertise in PC technology along with system-on-a-chip technology. So in his mind, he was like, you know, this could be a really good hire for the Apple computer business, not just the mobile division. And it's possible that he would even be based in Texas, where Apple has a presence there, as well as Samsung. What's actually an almost bigger story today, what's getting a lot of attention, is a study from mobile ad network Chitika. It's a study that the iPhone 5 is already taken over web traffic from the Samsung Galaxy S3. Now, it's interesting to note that this is not as far as all mobile devices go or a group of smartphones. This is just the iPhone 5 up against the Galaxy S3. When you put those two together, the iPhone 5 is taking 56% of pages, and the Galaxy S3 has just 44%, which is like, I mean, they're really not that far away from each other. What's interesting, though, is obviously the iPhone 5 has been out not as long. This is 3 weeks in, and the Galaxy S3 selling very strong. It had outsold the iPhone 4S in the month of August, a lot of people would say, but that's because everybody knew that the iPhone 5 was coming, which, of course, is partially true. But still, it's selling well. But I think this speaks to how well the iPhone 5 also has sold, and, you know, a global rollout. And a lot of people are using the, you know, making the most of the LTE that's now available on their iPhones that they didn't have before, and possibly looking up a lot of stuff, you know, when their Maps technology isn't working.
When you want an iOS, if you're looking at the operating system, you have three choices: iPhone 5, iPhone 4S, iPhone 4. And the iPhone 4S and the iPhone 4 now look kind of like old choices. So the iPhone 5 is generally top of mind for somebody who's like, I want to get into the iOS space. When you choose an Android phone, however, Samsung Galaxy S3 may be top of mind for most people, but it's certainly not nearly the same mind share that the iPhone 5 has among iOS. So is it a fair comparison, or is it actually positive for the Samsung Galaxy S3 that it's even as close to the iPhone 5, considering how many other Android phones there are out there to choose from, if you decide you want to go Android?
It. Yeah, I mean, it's 56 versus 44%. I mean, okay, yes, iPhone 5 on top, but that's pretty close, considering that the Galaxy S3 is one of, like you said, many phones. For, you know, in many people's opinion, yeah, it's the best one that you could choose from, but it's not like you're choosing from four models, you're choosing from 40. So go Samsung.
I'm just thinking about the actual picking up the design, the chip designer, the chip engineer, because this guy used to work at AMD, and they work on x86 things. So the fact that Murgard used to work on Brazos, if you know how Apple likes to just kind of do their own thing all the time, if they wanted to play around with leverage with Intel to say, hey, look, we got our own guys to do this. We can figure out our own way to make our own chips, because they do that for their iPads and their mobile devices.
Now that's intriguing.
That to me could be really interesting. But then again, he was working at Samsung. I don't know if he was working on the ARM side of it, but Samsung also makes PCs. So if they were working on x86 designs, that's another thing. So I'm really kind of curious about where that's going, because Apple could easily, because they do this all the time. They draw a line in the sand saying, we're done with this processor. We're done with this kind of system. We're going to change. This could be giant steps, or it's just like, okay, this guy knows how to manage a team. We'll bring them that way. Just kind of curious where Murgard's going to go and how that's going to change Apple over time.
I'm totally feeling you on this. It's really the ARM stuff that I find exciting right now. And I think it's really cool that, you know, everybody is like, there's so many options now. So you actually look back at like the beginning of the PC era, and then somehow we ended up with just Intel and AMD and, well, not really Cyrix anymore. But, you know, on the x86, I guess I should throw VIA into that list as well. But ARM is exciting. ARM, you've got Apple, Samsung, Marvell, Atheros, Qualcomm, and little tiny guys like Allwinner, Rockchip. There's so much exciting stuff happening in that, and it feels like the golden days of the PC. Or what's a PC anymore? You know what I mean.
Well, and what's intriguing about what Iaz is mentioning is Apple may be saying, we don't want to buy chips from Intel or AMD or anybody else. We're going to do what we do with our phone and design chips for all of our products in-house using the experience that we bought with PA Semi and we've developed in making the A6 and A5 processors and designing those for the iPhone and the iPad. And so the MacBook Air is the next one that we're going to toss out Intel, and we're going to have a version of OS X that runs on our own ARM-based architecture that we've designed. And then the MacBook Pro, and then maybe they're getting out of that high-end market altogether, and there are no more Mac Pros or MacBook Pros. I mean, it's kind of frightening to me, because the thing I love about having a Mac is the ability to have a high-powered machine that's well-built that I can run all three operating systems on when I need them. If Apple makes the chip, does that go away?
You can run Linux on ARM.
But will you be able to run it on an Apple-designed ARM?
Oh, well, of course not.
What Apple would be pushing was like they're merging iOS and OS X anyway. So the fact that it would be able to run thousands and thousands of apps or hundreds of thousands of apps would be interesting. And I doubt Apple would ever have an OS X RT. So they have it running on ARM on this thing and then OS X this way. Like, it'd probably just be a dedicated iOS machine entirely, because I don't think they would have the schism right now, because that's what they have right now. They have this Intel and ARM world, which mm-hmm. is what Microsoft's actually doing right now. So it's kind of interesting.
But that's the world, right? Mm-hmm. Your mobile devices run ARM-based chips for the most part, with a few Atom chips in there, and your other devices run Intel x86 architecture chips.
Or why don't we just call that legacy architecture? Because that seems like the way it's going.
Yeah.
Sad thing to say.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com. The new Squarespace is faster and easier than ever. If you want to create a high-quality website or blog or online portfolio, Squarespace is the thing to try. They give you everything you need to create an exceptional website. Now, Squarespace is focused on ease of use. They've made it even easier to use their new templates, but they also give you beautiful design like they always have, even better templates. They've added a bunch of great new templates to the templates they already had, and they give you the best customer support. They're available 24/7. They're also reliable. They are out there making sure that the servers are serving your website. They offer some great unlimited plans now. If you're like, well, I don't want to sign up to pay somebody. I'd rather have my own web host so I can have unlimited because I got some cheap deal with a web host. Take away the worry of having to operate your own web host and get the benefits of that unlimited service with Squarespace. The new web technologies they've included in Squarespace 6, HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript, and JSON. I mean, you get the power of new cutting-edge technologies, but you don't have to get in and mess with the code unless you want to. It's fast, it's flexible, and you don't have to take my word for it. Go try it out right now. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything to try it out. And you can use their plugins. You can see their mobile responsive design, how they make your website work well across platforms. Just create a website, maybe even import your old website into Squarespace, see how it looks. Look at it on a bunch of different devices, from iPhones on up to big old 32-inch monitors. Think you'll like what you see. And if you do, Use this offer code TNT10 and get 10% off your first purchase on new Squarespace accounts, including monthly and annual plans. Don't forget about free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT10. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. I mentioned in the news fuse that 3D printing is getting DRM. Nathan Mervold of Intellectual Ventures, former Microsoft CTO, sometimes referred to as a patent troll, but he definitely lives on that blurry edge. He runs a patent management company. He received a patent on Tuesday from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office called Manufacturing Control System that describes methods for managing object production rights. It's DRM for 3D printers. The system would have to be built into the printers and then would check to make sure you have the rights to make an object in question out of what material and how many times. So if the system is in place and it's being used, the manufacturer and the design maker controls how often you can print and what materials you can print. Also covers using digital files in extrusion, ejection, stamping, die casting, printing, painting, and tattooing. And the materials include textiles, paper, silicon printing, edible substances, and skin. So tattoo printers would be covered by this. It's a different issue than DRM. In some ways, it's very similar. You have to get the manufacturers to build it into the machine. Well, that has happened with video. It's built in to the Apple TV. It's built in to Android. You then have to get the companies who are distributing the designs to build it into the designs, right? That's happening in video as well. They have abandoned it with music. But it's not a copyright issue. It's a patent issue. This is a different world in that respect. You're not saying you don't have the right to make copies. You're saying you don't have the right to exploit my design. And patent design is much more limited in its length of protection. So you're not going to have something go into copyright in 1927 and be extended forever and ever unless they change the law, which isn't entirely impossible. But right now, I think patent is 14 years plus one extension.
Something like that.
Something close to that, at least in the United States, and it's similar in different countries. So, Ayaz,
yes.
Do you fear this? Or is this just, you know, it's a patent for somebody to say, hey, does the industry want to implement this? This is the point at which we decide, as an industry, whether we're going to have a DRM system in place in 3D printing. Music and movies and other things have gone through. E-books have gone through exactly the same process.
I mean, obviously the fear is that people, companies implemented, right? What this looks like when I was reading this, this is a fellow who wanted to come up with a really broad patent that if anybody designs a some kind of DRM structure for their devices and their plans, he could assert that, hey, look, I have a patent on that ready because I have this crazy, crazy broad one. The fact is, this is not exactly a well-developed field, right? This is 3D printing. This is not something that's for the masses and people were like, oh, I'm going to come up with my own methods and do this. This fellow seems to realize that there's a shift happening, getting a patent on this, and hopefully looks like he thinks he can make some money on it. That's what it looks like to me. Whether or not companies will go ahead with his method or they will go, okay, look, we're going to challenge this guy. That's the other thing they're going to do. Because if this seems really broad, and it seems to be covering a whole lot of things that I don't know if you can patent. So we'll have to see how that goes. But the real fear that I'm reading a lot of feedback, people are like, oh, no, then everything's going to be ruined. I can't print anything. Just because there is an option for DRM doesn't mean that printers have to use it, nor do designers have to.
So far, everything that's come along that could use DRM has at least tried it.
Right.
Now, in music, it went away, but it hasn't gone away from videos or television shows or books.
But you can have both at the same time. That's what I'm getting
sure at.
Because that's the thing. If this guy has DRM and the other plans don't, I mean, what you're going to see is like cheap knockoff plans, I'd imagine. So like if you have the design for your laptop, I'm like, I don't want to pay for that, and it's got DRM, I'm like, I'm going to get that one that my cousin made over there. So we'll see what happens with it, but it just seems like he's just trying to make some money.
Yeah, as far as Nathan Mervold goes, he realizes that somebody's going to want this and he wants to make money off it. Cory Doctorow pointed out on Boing Boing, he's like, well, maybe everybody will start suing each other over the patent to implement DRM on 3D printers and it will delay it from being implemented for a while. Darren, what do you think?
I don't know. It reminds me of in the 90s when you would go to the copy shop to print your band flyer or whatever and have somebody that's like, oh, that's copyrighted. You can't copy that here. And you're like, okay, dude, go across the street and copy it there. You know, so there's 50 different 3D printers on the market right now. I think there's a fat chance that this would be implemented by all 3D printers in the future.
Shall we move on then to the decline of search engines? Are they dying, Sarah?
Well, desktop ones are. Web search fell in September, which is significant because it's the first time since the Macquarie Group, who tracks this sort of stuff, began tracking in 2006. Pulling from ComScore data for the month shows that searches declined 4% year over year. Growth rates in search have been slowing since February. So we're seeing, I wouldn't call it a free fall, but certainly something that, you know, is significant as far as web search in general. Obviously, the big reason is mobile search. People using apps instead of traditional search to search for things like, I don't know, a restaurant or, you know, some sort of a service or a variety of things. And it's, you know, this is one of those things where you go, well, that makes sense, right? I mean, I could search on my desktop, but I can also search really easily on my smartphone.
So does this mean that search itself is staying the same? We're just moving. We're not doing it on the desktop as much?
Sort of. Search actually fell. Web search in general actually fell. However, search traffic is also gaining in smartphones and tablets. And it's interesting. Macquarie said by the end of this year, almost one third of all search traffic, so anything that you search for, is going to be coming from smartphones and tablets. What's interesting is that certain search terms, I mentioned restaurants, restaurant search is already at about 30% on mobile, which means that people aren't necessarily saying, what are we going to do? Okay, well, let's look up, make sure we know where the cross streets of the restaurant are, or make sure we know what the rating is on Yelp before we decide to leave. It's like, we're already out and about. Let's look at stuff on the fly. That definitely represents my behavior more and more. I mean, gone are the days where I, you know, if I had to get from, you know, where I was to a new address, I look it up on Google Maps or, you know, MapQuest before Google Maps came along, printed it out on the computer, made sure I had all the stuff I needed, and then went on my way. I mean, I was doing that well after I had a mobile phone where I could get this information just because it was cumbersome. You could get it on the fly, but it wasn't easy to do on the fly. And now it's basically the same experience. So, you know, you look up something when you need it. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this all seem like pretty obvious stuff?
What intrigues me is the fact that search in general is going down. Because when I first saw this story, I thought, okay, so search is fine. We're just doing it on our phones and our tablets because we're using phones and tablets more. It's just reflecting the change in usage behavior. But if search is actually, even when you add in mobile search, down a little, it means we're finding that information we used to search for in other ways. And I want to know what those other ways are. Is it social? Are we getting information just by reading Twitter and Facebook and other social networks? Are we using the Yelp app and the Urban Spoon app and the Foursquare app to find recommendations that we used to search for and look for guides, because search engine results, frankly, are not that useful in a lot of situations at weeding out the chaff from the really good results.
Yeah, the CNET article is saying that non-traditional search engines are going up, like Fab.com and HipMonk and Facebook's. When you're actually looking up email addresses or you're looking up local information, you know, I mean, I try to use Google or Bing for local information. It's like a cluster. It just doesn't give me – it'll give me great directions for something, I don't know, in like Minnesota. But I'm not in Minnesota. But the thing is, when you start looking around these smaller localized things like apps or just particular websites, it just saves you a lot more time because you actually – I mean, there was this time where I could search faster than other people because I knew the right words. I wouldn't write it in regular English and maybe it would come up. But you don't have to do that anymore because there's so many other options, not just doing like searching the entire web. You're searching these smaller aggregations of sites.
You know, Curtis B. in chat room brings up, does something like Siri count for web search? And I think that it would. You know, if you end up asking Siri something where the service has to bring you out into the web and give you search results, that's not too different than if you were just browsing the web for the search results. So I think that would count as far
sometimes,
as searching goes.
But sometimes Siri just brings it from its own database, and then it wouldn't. So
correct.
It kind of erodes that a little bit.
Well, I think it's the situations where Siri says, I'm not sure, Sarah, would you like me to look that up on the web? But then it's like, yeah, that's obviously, that would count as a search result, I think. But I'm in total agreement that there are a lot of apps that do one or two things very well. Specifically finding stuff. You know, you've got airline tickets. Well, you know, Google's actually pretty good with that too. But yeah, I mean, I use HipMonk almost exclusively, or maybe Kayak or something. And the more apps that people are using for specific things, and then they get used to them. For Foursquare, it's all about discovery for me these days. You know, I see all my friends' pictures on Instagram, and they're just things I'm not searching for blindly as much, because I know that there are already collections of them in these nice little packages that work really well on mobile.
Right. And wouldn't you think that this is why Google in particular has gone so far into having those like smart results or contextually aware results, where you're just like Google Now does on your Android Jelly Bean device, where it's like, oh, hey, that flight, here are the details at the top of the search results, because they understand that search is moving to those niche applications. I think that also another thing that might account for like the decline in search could be that less time is spent searching because the results are better. But I think that you guys are both right in that the niche seems to really be taking over. I just, you know, I wonder if one day there will be like a niche search for every single thing, and then just going generically to a Google will feel like going to Alta Vista or Lycos.
Like a desperate move. Like, wow, yeah. I just don't know where to find this information. I use Amazon to search for product prices. Not even for shopping, just like, I wonder how much this costs. Yep. I don't look it up on Google or Bing or anything else. I go to Amazon because I know pretty much everything is listed there, and I just want to get a list price.
So you don't, that's interesting because, you know, Amazon search results always show up at the top of the Google search results anyway. So I still use Google because I know that Amazon search results will be there, but then others will too.
Yeah, but then you get all kinds of crazy crap. If I just want to type in the name of a product and get a price, that doesn't work very well in Google. I get all these reviews and these crappy websites and all this polluted stuff. If I go to Amazon, I will get the product and a list price, which just seems more efficient to me.
Yeah, Tom, as somebody who actually runs an e-commerce store, that's how I go about pricing. I'm like, what does this go for on Amazon? You know, oh, cool, I'll go with that.
Yeah. And somebody's mentioning Wikipedia over and over and over again, and you're going to get bounced if you don't stop it. But it's a good example of another place where I often will just go straight there to look up something because of what you're saying, Sarah. Wikipedia is a great example of like you put in something and Wikipedia almost always shows up in the search results, which has actually started to train me to just be like, well, I might as well just go straight to Wikipedia then.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Darren.
I was just saying, you know, on that note, and I did the same thing. I used to type in Wikipedia space, whatever I'm looking for, and then click the first link in Google, and then it just gets easier with like Chrome and Firefox, how you can search directly within a website just by typing in the first few letters and then hitting tab.
All right, we have one more story to chat about here. You found this IAS. Google TV had a video up. It seemed to have leaked or maybe accidentally been made public, talking about the next version of Google TV, version 3.
Yeah, Google TV version 3 demo was out this morning. I was watching it. I'm like, oh, this is kind of neat. Let's talk about it today. And then the video got pulled. So it looks like maybe this wasn't supposed to be seen until some other time. It's marked as private, but Engadget has some screenshots of it. And I watched the video and I took some notes on exactly what it does. It's got Google Play integration. Now, Google announced Play Music and movies and TV would come to Google TV on Monday, but this would be built into version 3. They showed off the Google Play Music app. You could do voice search, finally. So what you can do is you can check live TV, Netflix, YouTube, and all your VOD services right from by using your voice. In the video, they demoed searching for Mad Men or searching for something like action comedies. You can jump to sites by saying Google Maps. Change the channel by saying find. Like this one says, watch TNT.
Probably Turner Network Television.
No,
but you should watch TNT anyway. I don't know if it'll search on the web for TNT or look for the network. But they showed it working with HBO.
That's when we're finally going to get our cease and desist.
And there's also a mini guide that appears on screen. So if you got a video playing in the background, you can check for other things to watch on that screen. Or you can do it on your tablet. So there's a second screen experience that's coming to Google TV that's better integrated. Now, a lot of this looks like great improvements to me because I've been waiting for Google TV to get good before I buy one, because I know, Tom, you have one, and I have not heard great things about it. What are your impressions of the version 3 demo that got pulled?
These seem like incremental updates, frankly. You can do all this stuff on the keyboard right now, and there is some second screen stuff that you can do on your Android tablets and your Android phones already. So this is perfecting what they already do. Adding voice search is not interesting to me at all. I just assume it's not going to work very well. Maybe I'll be wrong, but even Siri I never use because it fails too often. And so I'm just not interested in that at all. If you make it so that the interface that finds things irrespective of where they are works better, I love that. That's one of the things I love about Google TV is its attempt to be the unified interface that says we don't care if it's coming in off DirecTV or in Netflix or Hulu or YouTube. We're going to just search everything and tell you where you can watch what it is you want to watch. So if they get better at that, I'm excited.
Sarah, does any of these sound interesting to you? Because to me, voice search is way better than a keyboard because I don't want to use a keyboard when I'm looking for something. Like if voice dictation on my Android devices has worked really well. Yeah. What do you think?
I agree. If voice dictation works well, I mean, as long as it's not, you know, when you're on the phone with some automated service and you say, representative, what? No. I mean, I can sort of imagine myself saying, play Mad Men. No, stop, back, go back, home, Netflix.
Play Gangnam Style.
Play anything.
No. It doesn't remove the other functionality. A lot of people, you still have the other options.
Yeah.
No, you asked me if I'm excited about it.
But Darren, I know you have a Chrome box hooked up to your TV.
No. I had a Chrome box. I used my Chrome box with Chrome to go to YouTube to rent a movie, and YouTube promptly told me that I needed to upgrade to Chrome. I can't get any chromier. No, I've been only disappointed with Google TV and yet so hopeful because when it works so well. Yet out of the gate, it's just been a disappointment. And only because they put a Dorito in it instead of a real CPU. So if it has a faster chip, that's all I care about. Not a gimmick of talking to my TV. You know, yes, I will hand it to Google. They have done a fantastic job with the dictation. And I do. I talk to my Nexus. And it does a really good job. Sometimes it gets the word bison in there, but that's cool. The bison can hang out too. I'm down with that. But the idea of talking to my TV because it's that 10-foot experience and not that like 5-inch experience, I don't know about that. I don't think I want to be like yelling at a device across the room. Then again, for years now, I used to have roommates that would yell at the TV, especially when the Raiders were playing.
I think a lot of people had the experience of being the voice-activated remote for their parents at some point in their lives.
Yesterday.
But we're all talking about this like, you know, it would be this cumbersome play game. No, it's not doing it right. I mean, all of the futuristic movies that we all see, you know, where you've got somebody with a big screen in front of them and they say, open up something, you know, in a really casual way, and we all go, but we got to start somewhere, right?
No, I agree. You're right.
I want to eventually get to that place, so let's try version one.
I like your optimism.
My hacker brain is just going off. All I want to do is, like, set an Android app so that whenever it hears the word touchdown and woohoo, to turn off the TV.
Troll. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle.com. You want that new iPhone? You want that new Google TV box, whatever it comes out? You want a new tablet? Before you get a new one, make sure you sell your used phone to Gazelle for cash. Cash you can use to upgrade. Gazelle is simple and fast. You go to Gazelle.com. Tell Gazelle the condition of the device you're selling. They'll even buy broken iPhones for cash. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets, and Gazelle locks in the quote for 30 days. That's the brilliance of it, is once you get your new iPhone, then you ship your old one to Gazelle. They'll even pay the shipping. So you don't have to wait and try to figure out some weird transition. Lock in your price today, because the price is probably not going to go up, and then go get your new phone. Once they get your old phone, they'll get you paid fast by check or PayPal. Go to Gazelle.com now and get an offer for your iPhone. Do it today because, like I said, it probably isn't going to get more valuable over time. And you have 30 days to decide if you're going to send it in. You get paid fast and get paid in cash if you want. Offers are good for 30 days. So go to Gazelle.com, sell your used iPhone today. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. Let's see what's on the calendar, birthday girl.
All right, PubCon starts in Las Vegas on Monday, October 15th, and runs through the 18th. Are you going? If so, let us know how fun it is. Asus has teased October 23rd as the day the Vivo Book and the Vivo Tab will be announced at an event. They actually make a really big deal about it and say it's a new historical event in the world.
Like the discovery of physics.
Bread.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sliced bread. It was a big
best
day.
Thing since.
Yeah. Amazon's Kindle Paperwhite is coming to the UK on October 25th. It's going to start at £109. Sounds good to me.
Sounds heavy.
That does. Yeah. Very heavy.
Pounds expensive.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from Brandon who says, it's not too often that I feel I can provide better insight than the TNT audience has already provided, and I got really excited when I heard the topic of tipping at Starbucks. I am a Starbucks store manager and was actually able to hold a conversation with the Starbucks partner who struck the deal with Square last week. The issues with tipping is actually a cash management policy. Currently, baristas are tipped only with cash. That cash is kept completely separate from any of the cash from transactions. Once we start accepting tips via Square, we will have to start mixing the two. Currently, completely separated funds. Starbucks is working out a way to cash out tips and wants to get all the kinks worked out before rolling it out to 10,000 stores in the U.S. and Canada. Thank you, Brandon. That explanation makes perfect sense as to why my local coffee shop can say, oh, we'll take tips right away, because that's one store where they separate the cash out at the end of the night versus a manager saying, I have to figure out how to unify this process across 10,000 different managers. It makes perfect sense.
What about the receipts? I guess Starbucks doesn't participate this. You know, you get a receipt and you can write in the tip there, but then there's also a tip jar and you wonder.
The credit card receipts. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, maybe Starbucks doesn't participate in that.
Yeah,
we got another email from Mike C. in Olympia, Washington. He says, there are a few facts that don't seem to be taken into account when people say the PC market is in decline. First, PCs last longer than they used to. Home users and business users don't need to replace them as often. Even the high-end gaming machine doesn't need to be replaced as often. Most users don't use but a small portion of their resources on any decent PC built in the last 5 years. So I submit that just as many PCs are in use, just less are being bought. In my opinion, that doesn't spell a decline. It just points to better quality than the PCs of the past. You might have a point there, yeah.
I don't know. I kind of feel like the Xbox and the PlayStation 3 are ruining PC gaming, and that it has slowed down because these console generations are so long in the tooth and the developers are only focusing on those markets. And at the same time, the tablets and the smartphones and stuff are probably slowing down the PC market in the same way. I mean, remember netbooks where everybody was like, oh, it's good enough. No, it's not good enough. I want terahertz. Terahertz.
I do think people are slowing down their replacement cycle, though, and that is a good point. That's a fair point.
I mean, the thing is, we see all these crazy specs getting bumped and bumped and bumped, and like this guy was saying, how many people are actually using their computer to their full potential? Very rarely somebody pushing it. They're usually just browsing the web, so they can do that on a phone.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for submitting stories in our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. Helps us decide what stories we're going to include in the show each and every day. Love the folks who submit there. Love the folks who vote there. And especially love the moderators who make sure that it works really well. Appreciate all of their hard work. Also, best of submissions. If you liked something on the show this week or anytime, send it to us, tnt@twit.tv, and include the subject line best of. Let us know when and, if possible, the time code, so Jason can put that in our best of show at the end of the year. Darren Kitchen, always great to have you on by Skype, in person or otherwise. What's happening at Hack 5, man?
Oh, we're talking all sorts of fun reverse proxies, as well as how you can hook up via Bluetooth a PS3 controller on your Nexus 7 or whatever Android tablet you have to do a little bit of homebrew gaming.
Excellent. So check it out, hack5.org. We will be back on Monday?
Yeah, Monday.
This is
Monday.
Friday.
Yeah, this is Friday.
I don't know.
We'll be back Monday.
Sarah's birthday, and I'm already drunk. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. When we're back on Monday, Mike Hurley will be joining us. We'll see you then. Malarkey.